Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at Peace Health. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today. On our February edition of Doc Talk, I have the pleasure of once again speaking with Jess Kubisch. Now, she is a nurse anesthetist at Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. And we didn't get a chance, I think, the last time we talked, to kind of go into your background. So let's start off with, where are you from?
Oh, nice to see you again, George. It's great to be back. Well, I grew up in the Midwest, in Michigan and Indiana.
Okay.
And went to undergrad.
Not at the same time, though.
Right? No, not at the same time.
That little bit of Michigan.
Yeah,
a little bit of Indiana.
Okay. Yep. Went to undergrad at Franciscan University in Ohio. And after I got my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, went to UCLA, went all the way to the West Coast, and lived in LA for several years. And I worked in the pediatric ICU, which was a great experience, taking care of pediatric patients from all over the country and the world with many strange and unusual diseases. And that was a wonderful experience. And during that time, I actually did a lot of medical mission work. And one of the things that brought me to go to graduate school at Georgetown University was an experience I had in Haiti in 2010 after the big earthquake there. And I was able to volunteer with UCLA sent a team, and we went with the U.S. Navy, and I was able to experience, that whole third world country on top of a huge calamity, and it really moved my heart and actually opened some doors for me. So I went back to graduate school at Georgetown University on the other coast, and then received my Master's of Science in Nurse Anesthesia. Worked at Georgetown University for several years before I went back to get my doctorate, and at Virginia Commonwealth University, which I'll be graduating in May with that.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a big step there.
It is. I'm very excited. And going to VCU, I actually met Bill Prosser, who recruited me to Peace Health and this amazing little community here in Florence, and it's been great. My husband and I moved here in June, and we just absolutely love it.
So I got to ask you, and this, again, I have no frame of reference, because to me it would just be an incredible weight on my soul to be able to do that. How do you, like in the situation you were in Haiti and working in the pediatric ICU, how difficult is it to deal when a death occurs? That must be a tough...
Yeah, it's very difficult. And that was one reason I couldn't see myself doing it for an extended period of time, because of the emotional toll it was taking on me. I think when you become invested in a career like that, you have to have a professionalism and be detached. But we're all human. And when you form bonds with babies and children and their families, it is so difficult when you see them suffering. And, you know, seeing children suffering is one of the worst things in the world, and it is also something that is unifying in all of humanity, and you see it across all cultures and nations, and I think that that's something we all strive to address, is to relieve that suffering.
I wonder sometimes if people were able to see more of that, and God forbid that there would be more of it, but if that people were able to experience some of that, we might have a, a kinder world out there.
Oh, definitely. It definitely changed me as a person and really made me examine my own faith and made me question my faith as well, which I think is a natural progression. And I think that if you can tell when a person has suffered, it really changes them, and you do have more compassion. And when you witness suffering, especially in someone you love, it also opens your heart up.
So only child, several siblings. What's the story with that?
Oh, well, I'm the oldest of six children.
Oh, my.
Yes. And we're all scattered about the country. My younger sister, well, I'm the oldest. So my younger sister is in Michigan, and she has some lovely children and is married and works part time. And my brother is a lawyer in Washington, D.C., where he lives with his wife, who's also a lawyer.
That has implications, though, I'm sure. The fact that he's in D.C. Yeah.
Yes, I know. I told him he needs to get out. Just get out of the swamp. No. And then I have another sister who just graduated. She has her doctorate in physical therapy, and she's in Virginia. And another sister who's currently in her undergraduate studies in North Dakota, studying nursing as well. So I'm encouraging her there.
Wow. A lot of between medical and law. You're
yeah, it's kind of ironic. My parents are both engineers. My mom's a chemical engineer and my dad's a metallurgical engineer. And lots of engineering on both sides of the family. We were one of the first, I guess, to go into the medical field. And then my brother's one of the first lawyers. So
I just think that's a wonderful premise for a television series. You get mom and dad, they both have their little science labs in a room there, and they're working on things, and then they're raising kids that end up, I think that's
It would be a
cool.
sitcom, definitely.
Definitely. I mean, I can see that for sure.
Yep.
So you came to Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, back in June.
Yeah.
And you've been kind of settling in since then.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, going from a big academic center, university, you kind of feel a little bit like a cog in the wheel of production. There are lots of benefits, you know, research and the ability to have all these resources, and which is wonderful. And then coming to a very smaller, much smaller community of 10,000 people and a very small hospital of only 23 beds. It was definitely a paradigm shift. But one of the best things about Florence is just the community and the caring. And even every day when I go to work, all of my coworkers and my colleagues, there's just such a genuine sense of caring for the individual person. And I've really been struck by that. I really appreciate that. And I love Florence. I love my job.
And the great thing about it is, too, it's not limited to the people in the hospital. It's limited to, I mean, it's the entire community.
It is, exactly. I'll go to Fred Meyer's and I'll see my patients and they'll recognize me. And, you know, it really makes you want to do your best. Not that you wouldn't want to do your best, but you really want to just take care of these people that are in your community and are your neighbors and family and friends.
See, I had a job in Arizona that you didn't want to see your clients when you got out, because I worked in the juvenile detention.
Oh.
And if you saw it in public, you were supposed to, like, you know, stay away. But I was never able to do that. But
yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back. We'll talk more about what the last 8 months have been for you. Here.
Okay.
All right. We're talking with Jess Kubis. She is the nurse anesthetist at Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center here in Florence on this edition of Doc Talk.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today.
And we're back with Jess Kubis, and she is brand new to the community. Oh, I say just less than a year, just under a year there. So when you first got here, how was it kind of you know, getting into step with the slower pace, which I'm obviously, this is a slower pace.
It is. I have to say, I think the best part was the traffic. So I used to have a commute that was about an hour and a half in from Northern Virginia into DC. And now, you know, I'd listen to my podcasts and it was great, but I just hated the commute. And now it's, you know, 15 minutes and it's a beautiful scenic drive. And I pinch myself. I can't believe it.
Even 15 minutes is kind of long. You must live, you must live way out. You must live in Yaha.
I just drive safely.
Well, I can't even get a whole song in from the time it takes me to get from home to here.
Oh, so man, it's a tough life.
It is a tough life. So this is, like as we said, it's a different environment. So things are a little bit different here. You obviously have some wonderful credentials with you. What was the allure? What was the draw here other than, say, the pace?
You know, I really was impressed with Peace Health's mission statement, and it's a faith-based organization, and it really meant a lot to me to work in an environment that valued, had the same values as myself. So that was one thing. The second thing was that in a smaller community, you can have more of a direct impact. And I felt a little bit like I wasn't making as much of a direct impact as I wanted in people's lives. And so that's why one of the reasons I chose here. And then the third reason is I think that there's so much room for growth and opportunity at Peace Harbor. A lot of education needs, a lot of application of current research and best practices. And I really am going to be able to help do that at Peace Harbor.
So do you find that even though that this is a small community hospital, because it's a part of a larger network, that maybe some of the funds and some of the philosophy and everything is there to help this be a more state-of-the-art hospital?
Yeah, I do believe that. And I also think that our leadership with Ron Shearer and Jason Hawkins have a bigger eye on national standards and national practices that I think is very important. So it is important to look at what the rest of Peace Health is doing. But I think more importantly, it's important to look at what nationwide level, what are best practices? What does the research say and how do we implement this here? And because we are a small hospital, we're nimble. So it might take a lot longer and more effort to initiate change in, say, Riverbend or a larger facility. Because we have a smaller hospital, we can actually apply these best practices more quickly.
Right. It's easier to get five people to change than 500 people.
We've got Dr. McClune and Dr. Stauffer, our two general surgeons. And we have Dr. Hansen and now Dr. Thomas and Dr. Watanabe, who are our orthopedic surgeons. And our group, our anesthesia group and these surgeons, were looking into a national program that we found. And it's the Agency for Healthcare and Research, which is under the umbrella of HHS, and it's federally funded, and it's free for Peace Harbor. We're applying for it. And basically what it does is it gives us the resources necessary to apply certain best practices during the perioperative period to help the patients get the best outcomes. And it's driven by data. And we'll also be in a data collection for a nationwide database so we can be benchmarked against other hospitals that are applying best practices.
So I found we touched a little bit of this with Bill Proster when he was on. And the idea that when you set your standards, there's no reason not to go for the national standard versus what else is happening in the region or in the state. Because if you set the bar high, you got a better chance of reaching the bar. If you set it lower, you're going to go over the bar and then you're going to readjust.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we're aiming for.
And you say that's panning out pretty well under the leadership here?
Yeah, I think that the support and also the enthusiasm of the surgical teams and the nursing that we're really headed in the right direction towards implementing, you know, what are they doing at Cleveland Clinic? What is the best research showing about orthopedic total joint recovery? And, you know, a lot of the things are they need to increase nutrition. They need to be more mobile before the surgery. How do we get their protein intake up? And then the multimodal analgesic piece for anesthesia, how do we decrease the opioid consumption, which causes all these side effects like cognitive dysfunction, constipation, respiratory depression, all of these side effects that we can go on and on about that are negative. And how do we address their pain in other ways? Can we do nerve blocks? How do we use other medications that work in different pain pathways? And so this whole bundled approach is targeting best outcomes and experience for the patients. We don't want patients in the hospital for 5 days after a total joint. We want to get them out, get them moving, and make them comfortable and get them back to their normal routine.
You mentioned the fact that, like, increasing their protein levels, probably their fluid levels, intake and stuff like that, and they're doing a range of mobility before going into surgery. Now, obviously, the culture in America has kind of gotten away from all that. I mean, there is a sense that maybe some of the stuff that they're having to go through wouldn't be necessary if they were to do these things on a regular basis. Am I right in saying that?
You are very right. Unfortunately, you know, we are faced with also an obesity epidemic in the United States, and it's prevalent throughout the country. You know, I saw it in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles. Well, not as much in Los Angeles, but...
Well, that's because they had it all sucked out. You know,
that's right. But, you know, this is something everybody struggles with. You know, this is a common struggle we all face, is that bulge, battle of the bulge. So I think that you're right. In focusing towards a healthy lifestyle is the aim.
What are you trying to say? Wait a minute.
I'm not...
When she said that. I'm like, okay, I'm working on it.
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. I was thinking about myself.
Oh.
So making those choices every day, it's harder, but, you know, in the long run, it really pays off.
And again, you know, if you're facing surgery, you're faced with surgery. I have a friend who has to have two hips replaced. Mm-hmm. She's in her early 40s. She seems to be in fairly good health, but yet some degenerative thing happened with her that she has to
right.
do that. And she knows it's happening in the next month. So she's working on moving, and she was always hiking and stuff like that, which may have caused some of the problems. Mm. But she's working on that. So she's hoping to have a quick recovery from her surgery.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the patients that I see, even though say they're in their 80s, and if they're active and they live an active lifestyle and they're ideal body weight, so they're not overweight or obese, they have a much better outcome than patients that are deconditioned.
We will take a quick break now, and then just when we come back, if it's okay with you, we'll talk about what some of the training you're doing in the operating room and how to get staff prepared for maybe some crisis situations.
Sounds great.
We're talking with Jess Kubisch. She is the nurse anesthetist at Peace Harbor Medical Center right here in Florence. We'll be back with more of Doc Talk right after this.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today.
Our guest is Jess Kubisch on this edition of Doc Talk, sponsored by Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. And you visited us on our town for a little bit, and we kind of got into some of the practices and some of the training that's going on in the operating room at Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. So let's talk a little bit about how this hospital is preparing to handle a crisis situation.
Sure. So a lot of times the crisis situations that arise can be external. So say there was a fire in the hospital while there was surgery being performed, or there was an earthquake. So you can have external problems, or there are also problems that happen in the operating room to the patient. Say they have a heart attack, or, you know, they start bleeding and there's a massive hemorrhage situation. So all these things we all think about and we prepare for. And one of the ways that has been the best practice to prepare for these scenarios is actually high fidelity simulation. And what this entails is everybody practices a scenario, and it is very lifelike. So you have a high fidelity mannequin that can You can intubate, you can do chest compressions, you can do procedures on, looks lifelike. And then you have the team assembled and they're going about their usual activities of, say, they're doing the hip replacement. And then you have this scenario where the vital signs change and it's all, you know, on a computer and we're able to mimic that. And so then you respond to that. So it's been a work in progress, and we're developing a simulation resource team and working in conjunction with Riverbend. They actually have some high fidelity mannequins, adult and pediatric and neonatal. So they are bringing some of those mannequins to help us do these trainings quarterly. And so we're very excited about it.
So that obviously that takes a buy-in from everybody there. Has that been something that's easily come about?
Everybody has really recognize the importance of moving towards a zero harm culture and the safety culture development. And so we were really, really excited. A lot of people didn't really understand what simulation was and had maybe just had a small experience with it. But we are all very excited now to be on board and moving in the direction of this interdisciplinary training.
Now, how often does this training take place? How often do you perform it?
Well, we're working on a schedule currently. We have to figure out what scenarios are priority and how do we do that. Also, they're doing some renovations in the operating room area with the sterile processing unit. So that'll be for several months, and it's going to put a little crimp on our schedule plans. But we're really hoping to do a neonatal resuscitation simulation in April, the end of April. So that's like when you have a baby that's born and say they're not doing very well and you have to, you know, do some emergency procedures to save their life.
So obviously, common problems that might occur in the operating room are kind of dealt with on a regular basis. So you have a more a better routine as far as how to handle those. Yet each one, I'm sure, is unique and different when it occurs. What are some of the most common things that occur, that you guys are dealing with on a regular basis?
Well, you know, one of the difficult things about emergencies in the medical field is you have to have a differential diagnosis. So in your brain, you're looking at the situation, you're taking in the vital signs and assessing the patient, and you can realize their blood pressure is low, but it could be due to numerous factors. So you kind of have a checklist in your mind going through all of the things it could be. Some of the major emergencies that can occur are related to the respiratory system and the airway. So we're always assessing our patients, asking, do you have sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea? And there are numerous reasons why we do that, because they are at an increased risk during the perioperative period, especially if they're given opioids. And also, you know, if you have asthma, are you a smoker? And if you have any of these things, you're at an increased risk for bronchospasm, laryngospasm, which is basically if you have a hypersensitive airway and if you would have trouble breathing. And then also, you know, the big ones that you can think of would be a heart attack. So you never want to go into surgery and have a massive heart attack. So we're always ascertaining, are you at risk for having a heart attack? And so we want patients not to be at risk. So we follow, you know, the American College of Cardiologists and their recommendations for perioperative procedures. And then also for massive blood loss. So I would say those are some main emergencies.
So it's like, you know, you have like the first priority. Okay, if this is happening, we're going to check this first because that's the main thing that it could be. And then you go down the list.
Right.
See, I wish my mechanic had done that with my car because I told him when I brought it in that it was probably a fuse. They're like, no, it can't be a fuse. Turned out it was a fuse. But anyway, so, well, that's really cool that you guys are doing that.
And yeah.
That you guys are taking the time to do the additional training because, you know, it's not in your normal job purview necessarily. This is something added that you're bringing so that people know that they have a safe environment and a well-practiced environment.
Exactly.
I hate that term practice, you know, when you talk about medicine and stuff like that.
But practice makes perfect.
Practice does. Perfect practice.
Perfect practice makes perfect. You're right.
So let's see. You work with a great team of folks over there. Are you guys wanting to add more staff? Is there a hiring freeze or bringing more people on? What's the situation like?
Well, we're really excited. We just hired a new nurse anesthetist, Josh Delaney, and he'll be joining our practice the beginning of April. And he's coming from OHSU, where he just finished his clinical training. And we also have, so it's myself and then Bill Prosser, Robert Bland, and Dustin Degman. And we all really enjoy what we do. We're trying to make a big contribution, not only to our department, but to the hospital. And I think we're all seeking to establish and cultivate a culture of safety. So, you know, if somebody kind of, when I lived in DC, it was in the metro, if you see something, say something. The same mentality should arise here. If there's a nurse or a tech or anybody who feels uncomfortable or, you know, maybe is worried about a patient's condition, they should speak up and say that. It shouldn't be a patriarchal, top down. No, you know, you don't say anything. We're in charge. It's we want to cultivate safety and that mentality. Everybody has to take care of the patient. The patient is first and foremost, and we are responsible for making sure everything is safe for them.
That's an awesome thing. So I want to end this on a lighter note.
Yeah.
I gotta ask you, since I think you named four and then yourself, do the male nurses still get grief like they used to in the old days?
I don't.
Because it seems like you got a lot more of them.
Yeah, you know, I'm the only girl in the anesthesia department, so I don't know. You would have to ask them that. I'm not 100% sure.
Meet the Fockers, you know, where he's a male nurse.
He was a MERS or whatever.
Yeah, and they're all like giving him a hard time. So I just wondered, you know, next time I see Bill, if I say, hey, you know.
I think he's very proud of his profession and
sure
what he
is.
Does.
Well, and he's got a doctorate in it now, too.
Exactly, so, yeah. Exactly.
Well, congratulations to you. Thank you for coming to our wonderful community. Glad to have you here. And, you know, let's celebrate your doctorate when you get it this May.
Thank you so much, George. It's always nice talking with you.
All right, Jess Kubisch, everybody. She is with Peace Harbor Medical Center here. She's the nurse anesthetist. And soon she'll be a doctor of nurse anesthesiology or something. Is that right?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Okay. All right. That's our Doc Talk for the month of February. Thank you.
This has been Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.